the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Welcome to this special edition of Millennial Monday. On a Tuesday. I'm Justine Hall.
And I'm Crystal Kessler.
And we're going to start today's show off with a 2017 clip from Australia's 60 Minutes, where millionaire Tim Gerner shares his thoughts on the millennial generation.
We are coming into a new reality where first-home buyers, second-home buyers, and a lot of people won't own a house in their lifetime. That is just the reality of where we're going.
So you think that young people have now got the prospect of never owning a home?
Absolutely, when you're spending $40 a day on smashed avocado and coffees and not working. Of course. Absolutely.
So there are just so many things wrong with this assumption. It's hard to know even where to begin. But let's start off with the math of this.
Right. So most millennials are not purchasing these items every day. And honestly, I eat avocado toast all the time. And I can assure you, and I did actually break down exactly what it costs for my avocado toast. And I came up with my one serving of avocado breaks down to 37 cents, one egg at 33 cents, and a slice of toast at 23 cents. Grand total, less than $1, a whopping 93 cents.
So it's just like $40, right?
Pretty close. So a recent Forbes article debunked myths surrounding millennials' inability to save for retirement, controlling their spendings, and keeping their grubby young hands off luxuries like coffee and avocados. The article proves that while these myths might make great headlines, they're simply just not true. There are some real reasons millennials aren't investing. So there's the lack of knowledge in investing. They don't know where to start, and it's not taught in most high schools. Access to financial knowledge is just generally not easily accessible for most people. And then they perceive financial professionals to be too expensive, so they don't seek them out. And then 56% of non-investing millennials are not employed full-time, reducing access to retirement plans and the ability to have money left over in order to save for retirement. So if that's the case, I highly recommend opening up a Roth.
And as you said, these are only a few of the many reasons that millennials aren't investing, none of which has directly to do with spending on avocado toast or coffee, as easy of a reason as that may seem. Another reason that should be factored in are underlying systemic money challenges that face women specifically, such as the pink tax, the wage gap, the debt gap, the funding gap, the domestic work gap, and the investing gap. So there's a lot more at play here than just frivolous spending.
Right. And Justine, I love that you mentioned the pink tax because I have to throw something in here that I saw the other day. On Twitter, I was going through my feed and there was a picture that went viral from Ace Hardware that was pricing hotel personal care kits, his and hers. They were the exact same products, the toothpaste, the toothbrush, but the female kit was $1.40 more, and they put them right next to each other too.
So, oh my gosh.
I don't understand the logic.
Clear as day, how do we get away with it? Like, why is this happening?
Exactly. And then I have a personal example, and don't judge, but I use the Men's Hydro 5-blade razor, and I have no shame. One, it's a great razor, and two, it's cheaper than the exact same 5-blade women's razor. If you go on the actual Schick website, you can see that the men's 5-blade is actually $1.50 cheaper.
When it's the exact same product.
Exactly.
Exact same product. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So those are crazy examples, and they're just some examples of the hundreds of gaps and the gaps that we mentioned as well. But today we're going to go over some tips on what millennials can be doing to get started off on the right foot for their financial futures.
Right. So first tip, everyone buy men's products.
Yeah, there you go.
So yesterday, Josh and I went into great detail about making and setting goals when you enter the workforce. Most of these goals are going to require some savings, and the fastest way that you can meet those savings goals is through investing. So I always talk about the three bucket approach. It's for retirement, taxable, so midterm goals, and then emergency savings. So the most important bucket to fill up first is, of course, your emergency savings, which is 3 to 6 months worth of living expenses. And then once you have that filled, then you can go on to your intermediate goals.
Among the most recent graduating class of 2018, 69% of college students took out student loans, and they graduated with an average debt of $29,800, including both private and federal debt. Meanwhile, 14% of their parents took out an average of $35,600 in federal parent plus loans. And you've probably heard of another scary statistic. Americans owe over $1.56 trillion in student loan debt, spread out among 45 million borrowers. And that's about $521 billion more than the total U.S. credit card debt. And roughly two-thirds of that debt is held by women. So how does this play into starting to invest? Can you still invest if you have student loan debt? How does that work?
Yeah, so you can still invest if you have student loan debt. I would say pay off the loans that have interest rates over 5% first, and then keep the ones that are at lower interest rates. So the average federal student loan interest rate is between the years of 2006 and 2020 was 4.79% for undergraduates. There are plenty of ways to pay off student loan debt, and I would highly recommend working with an advisor to see what your options are, but there's ways to consolidate your debt, different repayment plans that you can choose based off of your income. Plus, you can use the interest rate paid from your student loan debt as a deduction that'll reduce your amount of taxable income up to $2,500.
And that's a great tip. I feel like a lot of people don't know about that.
No, exactly. And so use it to your advantage. But mainly the point that I'm trying to make is to factor in your student loan debt payments into your fixed expenses for your budget and focus on investing for retirement and other life goals that you may have. If your employer offers that 401k or even better, Roth 401k, start saving there, because retirement's going to be the biggest expense that you'll ever have in your life, and it's going to be the most important. And if they offer you a match, you should take advantage of it and at least contribute up to the match, because it's just free money.
And it seems like getting started with a 401k or a Roth account is a great place for someone to begin investing, especially if you're getting that match with free money. So can you explain the difference between a Roth 401k and a traditional 401k?
Yes. So a traditional 401k allows you to defer paying taxes on your contributions now, and your taxable income is lower because you're deferring the tax payments till the future. But a Roth 401k, you actually pay the taxes today, but come retirement, when you take that money out, it's all tax-free. And with tax rates being as low as they are right now, you're better off paying the taxes now than in the future when our tax laws sunset in 2025, and they're most likely headed higher.
Yes, and that's something we've discussed a lot on this podcast that Jim has talked about, and I think that's a really important thing to just put a big asterisk star next to, is pay the taxes now because they're only going to be going up, and serve yourself now and you'll thank yourself later. So in addition to the myth that millennials spend all their money on pricey avocado toast and coffee, another myth is that millennials aren't saving for retirement.
Mm-hmm. So Justine, does that mean you don't save for retirement? Because apparently I don't. Last I checked, I have a Roth 401k and a Roth IRA.
Well, thanks to your expert advice, Crystal, I'm currently maxing out my contributions in my 401k. But according to the Federal Reserve's Survey of Consumer Finances, millennials under the age of 35 have an average retirement savings account of around $32,500. The average retirement account for a baby boomer between the ages of 55 and 64 is around $374,000, and they are about to retire. The National Institute of Retirement Security came out with a study that of the millennials eligible to participate in employer plans, 9 out of 10 do so.
Right. So as you can see, millennials are saving for retirement, and they know it's important. So on yesterday's podcast with Josh, I talked about this calculator on smartasset.com, but I actually found another one that will link to this podcast as well for retirement, and it's on smartasset.com. So what I did was I put in the average baby boomer's retirement savings, born in 1960, annual income of 100K, retiring at age 65, annual expenses in retirement of a conservative about $60,000 a year. And according to this data, a retiree would need almost $700,000 in order to retire by 65. And they would need to save a minimum of $2,311 per month to achieve this goal.
Quite a goal.
Right? And so now, obviously, there are a lot of factors that play into this, and some individuals have less expenses or they have a pension plan in place, et cetera. But every situation's different. So again, working with an advisor really does help.
So as you just pointed out, Crystal, even though $374,000, the average baby boomer's retirement savings right now, might sound like a lot, it's actually not sustainable through retirement. What should millennials do to put themselves in a good position to retire comfortably?
Like I mentioned before, most millennials need to be educated on how to invest in different types of investment vehicles. Millennials with taxable accounts, which are non-retirement accounts, have more aspirational goals compared to other millennials. Non-investing millennials have modest financial goals and are focused on surviving month to month. So I did the same calculation using that smart asset calculator for a millennial, age 34, average retirement savings at that $32,500, an annual salary of $50,000, which I chose because it's the average salary for an entry-level position, and I'm trying to be conservative here. Annual retirement expenses at $60,000 and then retiring at age 65. According to this data, a millennial retiree would need almost $1,361,578 to retire comfortably. Now, that is factoring in inflation because this is very far out in the future, but to accomplish this, they would need to save a minimum of $1,275 per month every single month until retirement. But if you compare it back to those baby boomers that are that need to save over $2,000, you can see that the earlier you start investing, the better. So millennials are putting themselves in a great position by starting to save earlier.
And that's really important to note, is having that number from the start so you know realistically what you need to be saving and how you can plan that out. Jim actually did a podcast on this, How to Become a Millennial Millionaire, and he breaks it down as to what you need to save each month in order to make that happen. I think retirement seems like this far off goal, but it's not really a tangible idea yet. And so the quicker and sooner we start thinking about it, we'll certainly be happier for it in the long run.
Yeah, and saving up over $1 million at this point as a millennial with the rate of inflation by the time we're actually retiring, we need to be millionaires at that point.
You think only, you know, people in Silicon Valley or someone with a startup can be a millionaire, but that's actually not the case. So there are a lot of different millennial myths, and another one of my favorites is that millennials don't want to buy houses. So going back to our Australian millionaire, Tim Gerner, he believes the reason we can't buy houses is because of our $40 avocado toast and coffee addictions. However, now that we've talked about how to fill up your emergency bucket or your retirement bucket, let's talk about midterm goals that millennials have made as a top priority. A NerdWallet survey found that 82% of millennials say buying a home is a priority. So once you've saved for retirement and you've gotten all those other emergency funds saved, how can you make that happen?
Right. So everyone paints this horrible picture of why millennials aren't buying homes because of ridiculous expenses like avocado toast and our daily lattes being $40. Or the best line that I've heard about why we're not buying homes is we get the worst FOMO, fear of moving out of our parents' house.
That's a pretty good one. That's a whole new FOMO.
Yes, exactly. So according to a study done by Ellie Mae in 2017, which analyzes mortgage data, millennials represent about 45% of all purchase loans. So the true reasons why millennials aren't purchasing as early as they could be is because we have large student loans. It's a huge issue for us. And then with interest rates being as low as they are, we're competing against investment buyers. Another reason is the housing market is at all-time highs. And although it's cooling down, you don't want to buy at the top of the market because you don't want it to go down. And then another reason is there's always multiple offers on housing and that drives prices up. And then the last two are we have cost of living in bigger cities. It's a lot more expensive to buy a home than in rural areas. And then going back to what we talked about before, not being equipped with the knowledge of how to invest is really gonna impact you being able to save for a down payment on a house that's 20%. I have to go with some of my personal experiences with buying a home. I am a millennial, but one of my top priorities is to buy a house. And about a year ago, I was in the market, and originally my dad was actually gonna be helping me out with everything, and then I was gonna work on paying him back. So the market was really hot, and there were always multiple offers on every place that I was putting bids on. And then also it was at market all-time high, so that really didn't help me out. And then every single time, investment buyers were coming in with all cash offers, and comparing it to a loan, every owner is going to take that cash offer before they pay a loan because they think that you're going to default on your loan. So I got very discouraged after losing five places coming in at the same exact offer prices. Just I had a loan, they had all cash.
And wow, I would be discouraged too after five places having that happen.
Exactly. It's heartbreaking.
Like, why go to the next place if the same thing's going to happen?
Yeah, because yeah, all five houses, I was like, this is my dream place. Like, I want to stay here forever. And then wiped out. Dreams crushed. So yeah, so I basically decided to continue living with roommates, save my money aggressively, and then enter the market again when I could do it without my father's help. So I actually now have saved up enough money, so I'm pretty proud of that. It's definitely going to be a challenge, I believe, but it's nice because I've actually seen that housing prices of the same exact condos that I was really looking at are actually significantly lower.
So there you go. It's that saying slow and steady wins the race, and now you're seeing the prices drop down, but that's certainly impressive.
And also, if you are starting to look and go into the market as a millennial, I have a couple tips to kind of help you out. One, you should get pre-approved, get the pre-approval letter, have it ready each time you're ready to submit that bid for that new house. Write a personal letter about yourself and your personal experience, how you are a first-time home buyer and you know, why you're valuing this property.
It's almost like applying for a job. You have to make sure you have everything in order. You have your cover letter, your resume, yes, proving yourself, kind of thinking of it in that same way.
No, exactly. And you kind of have to set yourself apart from the other buyers, because you're going against these all cash investment buyers. And just from a personal experience, I had a letter that I had written. It was about me being a first time home buyer. And it did actually work out one time for me. I was going against another investment buyer who was paying all cash. And so they were like, let's give this girl a chance because it is her first time. We like the fact that she's a first time home buyer. So they did this thing called best and final offer. It is actually the worst. So you basically put in your offer at your best and final price. So pretty high, the highest you're gonna be able to go. And so we both came in at the exact same best and final.
Oh no.
And they still gave it to the cash buyer. So it was unfortunate, but it does help. It does show that if you do write something personal about yourself, it's going to set you apart a little bit and they're going to give you more of a chance. Now, maybe if you come in higher, you'll really get it.
But, but getting that letter in certainly did help you at least get to that final stage. And I think that's a great tip to keep in mind. And I think it's something that maybe a lot of people aren't as aware of.
Another thing to keep in mind is to work with a good real estate agent that you trust, because a good real estate agent is actually going to follow up with the owners, make sure that your bid is on time, making sure that you're comfortable and they know what you want. So I had one really great real estate agent and then one pretty poor real estate agent. So once you're able to trust somebody, it's really easy to just reach back out to them and be like, hey, I'm back in this market, so I know that's what I'll be doing. But definitely work with a good real estate agent. Last but not least, I really recommend working with a financial planner to set your goals if you are looking into buying a house, because they're going to be able to let you know what you can afford, what kind of interest rate is good for you, and then also what down payment you should be expecting to pay.
I think that's such a great tip, especially working with a financial planner who will have your goals in mind and know how to work best with you and find what's going to be the right fit for you and what you want to put down for a loan and all of those really important things to figure out. All of those tips were excellent, Crystal, and there's been so much valuable information that you've shared in this podcast today about what barriers millennials face when it comes to investing, saving for retirement, and buying a home. It would certainly be a lot easier if all millennials had to do was cut back on their toast and coffee consumption and be millionaires and ready to buy homes and completely saved up for retirement.
So
I know that we were at brunch this weekend just to disprove Tim Gerner's theory of the $40 avocado toast.
So apparently we brunch every single day, according to Tim Gerner.
Right.
And so, but we went on Saturday for one of our good friends' birthdays. They had two different selections of avocado toast.
And this is at a nice restaurant that's by the water, so already you know prices are going to be higher.
Exactly. And so they had a loaded avocado toast, and then they had just a normal, simple avocado toast. So we got the loaded avocado toast, and that was $12.
Already outrageous for a piece of toast. But not nearly as outrageous as $40. I'd love to see a place that actually charges $40 for avocado toast.
Exactly. And I do have to admit, there had to have been at least two full avocados on this loaded. Like, I had to take off half of the avocado. It was ridiculous.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. And I'd like to invite anyone who listened to today's show to share with your friends and family. And we'll post links to a lot of the research that we mentioned on today's program in the show notes, where the interview is posted on financialsense.com. So, Crystal, if anyone wants to speak with you, how can they do so?
Yeah, so they can always call into the office and ask for me. The toll-free number here is 888-486-3939, or they can email me at Crystal, so C-R-Y-S-T-A-L, Kessler, K-E-S-S-L-E-R, at financialsense.com. And Justine, if they want to reach out to you, how can they get a hold of you?
Email me at Justine, J-U-S-T-I-N-E .Hall, H-A-L-L, at financialsense.com. Crystal has all the expert advice, and you should certainly contact her for any questions about financial planning, especially if you're a millennial or just getting started. Until the next Millennial Monday,
we'll see you soon.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.